And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is beware. Each of my guests is warning us to beware of something, whether it's big government or big business. My next guest is a culture warrior on Bill O'Reilly's show. She's also a descendant of President Herbert Hoover. We're going to discuss how a new generation of conservatives can save the Republican Party from her book titled American Individualism. And if you want to join in the conversation or ask a question, you can call us at 639-0008. My next guest, Margaret Hoover, is a political commentator, a political strategist, and a blogger. She's a news analyst and appears on the O'Reilly Factor as a culture warrior, as I said before. Her latest book is American Individualism, How a New Generation of Conservatives Can Save the Republican Party. Interestingly enough, Margaret is also the great-granddaughter of President Herbert Hoover. Joining us from the Washington, D.C. area. Hi, Margaret. How are you today?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Terrific, and thank you for being our guest on the show today. I want to dive right into your new book, American Individualism. The subtitle on the book, How a New Generation of Conservatives Can Save the Republican Party, implies that the Republican Party needs saving. What's wrong with the Republican Party today, do you think?
Nothing at all, and in fact, that we're on the right course in terms of getting back the government in 2012, the executive branch, and we've done a remarkable thing in the last 2 years by sending 87 freshmen to Congress that have practically, you know, churned the ship of state 180 degrees in terms of policy making, getting control of our outrageous debts and deficits, skyrocketing spending. And the beware that is the theme of your show today is actually the subtext of the title, because my book is about the next generation of people, the rising generation in America, the millennial generation. These are basically 30 years old and under. They made the majority of the difference in President Obama's election. And the beware is that the Republican Party has 12 months to make inroads with this generation, or we could lose them for the rest of their lives, and here's why. Now, they were born at the beginning of the Reagan era to the end of the Clinton presidency, and the generation's partisan and political identity tends to solidify over time the way cement solidifies. It's soft at first. As they get through their first presidential election cycle, then second presidential election cycle, by the third time they hit a presidential election cycle, if they have voted for the same party three times in a row, their partisan and political identity will align with that party for the rest of their voting lives. Now, they voted in 2004 by 9 points for John Kerry. They voted in 2008 by 34 percentage points for Barack Obama. So in 2012, this means Republicans have, and this is the beware, 12 months to make inroads with this next generation, or else we lose them to Democratic or independent voter rolls for the rest of their lives.
And that is such an interesting point, Margaret, because we just had Justin Folk on as the guest before you. He did the short film that won the Freedom Prize, $100,000 Freedom Prize, Spending His Nuts at spendinghisnuts.com. And what he found was that the Democratic Party used new media to attract the millennial generation. That is something that the Republicans were woefully inadequate at in the presidential election where Obama was elected president. In fact, he says he reckons it was 5-1 Obama outproduced, outspent in the new media area. How can the Republicans gain the upper edge or at least try to cut that deficit in new media to attract some of these millennials?
Well, that is the key. There's no science to it. It's just that we need to be where they are, and they're online. And if our online activism engages, it can up participation in politics by 27%. A new study from the Harvard Institute of Politics that focuses on the millennial generation, how to engage them. They're online. We need to be online. They're also texting. I talk in my book about how this is a generation of tattoos, iTunes, and Twitter, and texting. And this generation, I went to the Republican convention and the Democratic convention in 2008. And in Denver, they had this thing on the screen where you could text Obama and he would text you back and you could stay in touch with him. And I, to this day, get text messages from the Democratic Party and from President Obama. But when I went a week later to the Republican National Convention, I didn't have the option of sending in a text message and hearing back from candidate McCain or from the RNC. Now, I will tell you, the RNC is onto this, and I've been talking to them a little bit. They just released a new video about jobs and engaging the next generation this week. It's online, but if you texted UNITE, U-N-I-T-E, if you texted UNITE to 91919,
91919.
So it's 91919.
Got it.
And you text Unite. You hear back immediately from Chairman Reince Priebus from the RNC, and they are, they've gotten the message. They're laying the groundwork. They're collecting data from and contacts with people, and every contact with a person, that's an engagement. So they're getting there, but I agree with you. We online activism and texting, mobile phone activism is a place where I think the RNC knows that they can improve, and they're laying the groundwork now so that when we get our candidate, because it's possible we don't have a candidate until June or July of next year, and that's going to basically give us 4 or 5 months to it's a race to the finish, and it's just going to be a sprint. So hopefully the RNC is laying the groundwork now so that whoever becomes a candidate can embrace that network.
My guest is Margaret Hoover, author of the book American Individualism, How a New Generation of Conservatives Can Save the Republican Party. I guess, Margaret, in all of this discussion, underlying the subtext here is this really the passing of the political mantle from the baby boom generation to the millennial generation that we're seeing with all of this talk of texting and all of this talk of Twitter and so forth?
Well, in many ways it is. Look, this next generation, there has been an absolute revolution in information technology that is on order. I was listening to the president of Columbia University last night, who likened the last 10 years, the advent of the Internet, to something akin in human civilization to the invention of the printing press. It has transformed civilization. 6 billion people in the world, a third of them, 2 billion, are online today. And that's happened in 10 years. It's transformed our lives in ways that, you know, we're just plugging in. We can't even imagine how it's going to transform our lives in the next decade, let alone century.
Very true.
And that is something so significant, and it will impact our politics too. But it just means that the millennial generation's experience on this earth in their short period of time has been transformationally different from everyone older than them, and that's going to translate to politics.
Without a doubt. All right, Margaret, let's go back to the title of your book, because I love the title of your book, did a little research on it, American Individualism. From where did that phrase come, and why is it as important today as it was nearly a century ago?
So it's funny. I appreciate you asking the question. The question is, the answer is that Herbert Hoover wrote a book called American Individualism in 1922. Herbert Hoover had lived abroad for 20 years. He had watched he had been one of the last Americans, foreigners, to escape from China during the Boxer Rebellion. He had survived. He watched the Bolshevik Revolution destroy his mining properties in Russia. He had seen the rise of a belligerent Germany in the beginning of World War I, where he had fed 8 million Russians, saved them from starvation by organizing food relief as an individual private citizen. And he was worried in 1922, when he returned to the United States, that we were beginning to flirt with some of the political isms that had been what he called political fads in other parts of the world. Of course, the tide of revolution was sweeping the globe at the beginning of the 20th century. And so he worried that fascism, Bolshevism, communism, socialism would be ideas that America would seriously try on and consider in times where we doubted our own system, our own political system. And so he tried to characterize, in his own words, what made the American system great. And he called it the system of American individualism, which was a system, not just an economic system or a political system, but a system, too, that was a social system. And it was tempered by equality of opportunity and social mobility. And he knew personally that his story would be impossible in any other country on earth. He was born a frontier family. He was orphaned when he was 9 years old. He was entirely self-made. He began his life in manual labor, working in the bottom of a mine, night shifts for $2 a week, and had been able to ascend to the really greatest heights of wealth and influence by the time he was 40 years old. And that was before his political career even began.
Yeah.
So he tried to characterize the American system of American individualism, and I think it's extraordinarily relevant to the millennial generation because it values all the things that Herbert Hoover valued in his own life. He was a globalist. He was a technologist. He believed he was dedicated to serving humanity through his humanitarian efforts, saving people from starvation. And he believed that government could be made to work, but he felt that there was a very clear line between what government could do and what individuals should do. And that's what he wrote about in American Individualism. I think that appeals to millennial sensibilities in surprising ways. He anticipated the millennial ethos by 80 years. And so I try to connect the Republican Party of the next generation in this template that Herbert Hoover wrote 100 years ago.
Amazing. And my guest is Margaret Hoover. I found it also very interesting that your great-grandfather in 1936 said, "Blessed are the young, for they shall inherit the national debt." You talk about being prescient. Talk to me about that. I mean, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Today, this is still a problem. So talk to us about the national debt. Do the millennials really feel the pressure of the national debt that your great-grandfather did in 1936?
Yes, and that's what I do in the book is I take different issues, chapter by chapter, on how we can connect to the millennial generation, because they may not call themselves Republicans. They may not identify with conservatism. But if you go issue by issue, I actually make the case that they are strong fiscal conservatives, for one. There's a chapter called Generational Theft. And this generation totally understands that we are mortgaging our futures on their backs, that Social Security isn't going to be there for them. Medicare, Medicaid, not going to be there for them. In fact, if we don't do things to reform those systems now, that not only is it not going to be there for them, but they are going to inherit an economic future that has far less prosperity and far less economic opportunity. And so this is surprisingly, as unsexy as spending, debt, and deficits is as a topic to talk about, they understand that this mobilizes them because it affects deeply their economic opportunity and their fiscal future. And this is, I think, why you see an enormous outflowing, frankly, among the young for Ron Paul, because one of the things Ron Paul is talking about in all of his rallies and all his talks to youth across the country is the fiscal unsustainability of the course that we're on. And this, it is generational theft. We are receiving fiscal prosperity and economic prosperity from the next generation. They understand that, and that's, I think, your previous guest talked about it, was spending is nuts.
Right.
And there are a lot of millennials who talk about this. There's a website called wecan'tpaythattab.org, run by millennials, about balancing the budget and getting spending priorities in order, because we can't pay that tab.
No, we certainly can't. Margaret, let me help you to square that whole philosophy that you just laid out with what's going on with the Occupy Wall Street movement. I mean, you take a look at the films and so forth. Most of the people there are the younger generation, what you might call the millennials. So how does the Occupy Wall Street movement square up with this conservatism that you see inherent in millennials?
Well, the one thing I'll tell you is that, so I live in New York.
Yeah.
I'm not here from D.C. today. I'm here from New York, and I live a block and a half away from the Occupy Wall Street movement, from Zuccotti Park. I live on Pine Street, which is a block off Wall Street. So I pass these guys every day. They are, I would say, two-thirds kid and one-third baby boomers who missed the 60s, and so they've come down for the second round of the party. And the kids that are there are not your typical millennials. This is a fringe fest. It is a fringe festival. You've got folks who are protesting it's a patchwork quilt of left-wing progressive ideologies, and each has their own pet project, which is why there's no cohesive message from the Occupy Wall Street thing. They're protesting, but they're all protesting different things. You've got Greenpeace, and you've got corporatism, and you've got, the sign I saw last week there was amazing. It was protesting 519 years of Native occupation. So forget Occupy Wall Street. It's the American genocide to Native American Indians that this particular corner of Zuccotti Park was protesting. I mean, it is, again, it's such a carnival of different interests that it's a fringe festival rather than a representation of mainstream millennials. And so while, yes, they're young, many of them, by the way, the young are 37% unemployed and unemployed or underemployed. But this doesn't represent the mainstream sense of millennials, and that's who we're talking about, and that's who we need to reach out to.
All right. My guest is Margaret Hoover, author of the book American Individualism, How a New Generation of Conservatives Can Save the Republican Party. So I saved the best for last, Margaret. I'd like you to handicap the GOP presidential nomination for us. Who do you see emerging as the best hope to attract the millennial voters?
I think, I sigh heavily because, I think some of our best hopes are on the bench for 2016 or could be a good VP nominee. We have such great new blood in the Republican Party because of 2012. And I love Paul Ryan. I think he speaks, millennial speaks so well in his approach and his tone to politics that he is a strong conservative, but he can speak in a way that attracts millennials because it's not deeply ideological, it's deeply pragmatic. So he can explain conservatism in a way that makes sense and doesn't turn the kids off. I think Marco Rubio's got a good chance of doing that as well. There's a lot of new faces, women, Hispanics. Brian Sandoval, the governor of Nevada, right next door to you guys, is a great new face and voice in the Republican Party and the conservative movement. Susana Martinez, border state governor in New Mexico. So I think there's a lot of new, fresh faces that will be there in 2016. I think, you know, Mitt Romney is sort of ahead of the pack, and I think he may be able to do it. You know, the good thing about the millennials from the Republican perspective is they are deeply disappointed in Barack Obama. They came out for him strong. They've been disappointed. They didn't turn out in 2012 nearly in the numbers we thought they would. They've been at 25% drop in support for him since January of 2009. Now it's under, it's 47%. A Washington Post ABC poll had them at last month. So that is that's a significant decline at 47%. And by the way, they're his strongest group holding out for him, and they're under 50%. So that means that the Republican nominee, whoever he or she is, has a very, very strong chance at taking back the White House and making inroads with the millennials.
All right. Parting shot for you. Do you think that the fact that the millennials are turned off by Barack Obama's performance so far as president of the United States will disillusion them to the point where they won't vote for anybody? They'll be turned off of the system entirely?
Well, thank you for that final beware. Because in order, in keeping with the theme, I think that the main beware for the Republican Party is, yes, that is a cost, that is a problem. I mean, they voted, they were 18% of the electorate in 2008. They voted, 51% of them voted. So in the same, almost the same proportion of the rest of the voting population. There will be 65 million of them eligible to vote in 2012. If they turn out in the same numbers as 2008, they will be 24% of the electorate. So this is huge. If we make inroads with them, they'll turn out, but our beware is that we've got to try, we've got to reach out, we've got to show up, we've got to get online, we've got to mobilize them, because if we don't, I fear that they won't turn out because they are so disappointed. So there's something that we have a moment of opportunity, a window of opportunity right now where we can reach out, connect, engage them, mobilize them, and bring them into the Republican tent. And it's certainly my hope that the Republican Party does that. And there's some really great and optimistic signs that the RNC gets it, is reaching out, and I hope that the Republican nominee, whoever he or she is, will do the same.
Well, it's a call to action. My guest has been Margaret Hoover, author of the book American Individualism, How a New Generation of Conservatives Can Save the Republican Party. Margaret, if people like what they hear, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
MargaretHoover.com.
MargaretHoover.com.
And if you buy it, I'll sign it for you.
That's marvelous. Thank you, Margaret, for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you.
Thank you.